Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Pride of Detroit podcast, an emergency episode because we're in the middle of free agency and a lot of things are happening around the NFL. A lot of things are happening to the Detroit Lions. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I'm the editor-in-chief at Pride of Detroit. You can find me at Detroit Online. With me, we got a two-man crew rolling this time around. Ryan Matthews is with us at Ryan_POD. Ryan, how are we doing tonight?
I am doing well, Jeremy. How are you?
Good. For the first time on an official POD cast, the managing editor of Pride of Detroit, Eric Schlitt, is with us at Eric Schlitt on Twitter with a K. Eric with a K. Eric, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good, guys. Nice to see you on video here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's waste no time. Let's get into it. We did an emergency podcast earlier in the week. Since then, we have had two acquisitions for the Detroit Lions and a handful of players lost. Let's start with the positive news because we had some not so great news break literally right before we jumped on here. But let's start with the good stuff. Jamal Williams. Now, everyone knows what I feel about acquiring running backs, so the Lions had to tread lightly here to get my stamp of approval, but they signed Jamal Williams to a two-year, $6 million deal, up to $7.5 million with incentives. If you were to look at Packers Twitter since news broke about at midnight last night, they seem to be quite devastated about the move, and that's enough to make me smile. But let's go to Ryan first. What were your initial thoughts on this deal when I'm assuming you woke up this morning and heard about it?
Well, so the funny thing was, is that I woke up probably around it was like close to maybe like 10 to 1 last night. And Twitter was way more active than it normally is at that time, especially for my Twitter feed. So there was the Jamal Williams news, and I was I wasn't totally surprised by it, but I was impressed with it, I guess, was my initial takeaway. I'm a fan of Jamal Williams in terms of the dynamic he's going to add to the Lions backfield. I say I wasn't surprised by it pretty much because of our discussion that we had with Deuce Staley and the vote of confidence that he gave in Kerryon Johnson. However, you know, I always talk about it on the podcast. The greatest ability is what, Jeremy?
Your availability.
That's right. And, you know, while Kerryon Johnson did play in all 16 games last year, it's the first time that he did it. So, you know, having an insurance policy like Jamal Williams, I think, and I think he's going to be more than an insurance policy. I think that a couple of things, right? And I'll kick this over to Eric. But one, it's definitely not going to take any of the food off of DeAndre Swift's plate. Like, that guy is still going to eat. So yep. Lions fans, rest assured, Jamal Williams does not eat into DeAndre Swift's workload. But what he does is he's the kind of back that Deuce Staley covets, right, Eric?
Yeah, absolutely. He wants a running back who's versatile. He wants a running back who can pass protect. And Jamal Williams can do both of those things. And then to, you know, even extrapolate what his value is beyond that, you look at the fact that he's a power runner, which is something that they're missing. He's still young, and so there's an opportunity for him still to develop, and so there's a lot to like about him. You know, you can use him in short yardage situations. You can use him as a spell for Swift. You can use him as a starter if Swift goes down, because it's not just Kerryon that's found himself injured. It's Swift as well, and he's shown that he's capable of being a starter. With the Packers, he played 60 games with the Packers, and 20 of them he was required to be the starter in those games. I believe the last time or the time before that even the Lions played him, he was the starter. I forget which one it was, but it was recently. And so he's not super explosive, right? He's explosive. He's not super agile. Right. And so the agility, you're going to look to the other two, but he is patient, and that patience creates a lot of opportunities for him. And so, yeah, I do agree. I think he's going to slot in probably at number two. Kerryon, I think one of the reasons he was probably healthy last year was because he was on a shorter snap count. And if we're being honest here. And so, I mean, I am like Kerryon, and what he did as a rookie and what we saw in camp as a rookie was fantastic. But since his injuries, it seems to have taken a toll on him a little bit. Maybe he'll bounce back. The opportunity will be there. But for now, you have to think that the pecking order is Swift, Williams, and then Johnson will be third.
Yeah, and the reason I love the signing, besides the fact that it's fairly cheap, you know, the official contract isn't out there yet, but someone threw out there, I think it was Jamal Williams, social media manager, threw out hits, which is $1.6 million this year, $4.3 million next year. And if that's true, like that's a fantastic deal for the Lions. But the other reason I love it is that this has been a hole on the Lions roster for years. They've been kind of rotating through RB1 as they draft guys, but they've been replaced, you know, that RB2 spot has been filled with these 30 plus year old guys on the tail end of their career. They finally got a guy who's 25, productive in the RB2 role for years and years and years, and versatile. He can catch the ball. I know he's kind of thought as like a big bruising back, but he can catch the ball too. And like you said, pass protect, all that sort of stuff. He could potentially be that three down back if the Lions need it, if DeAndre Swift suffers that injury. So I'm hard to please when it comes to spending money on a running back, but I think the Lions did just about as well as they could have done. And Eric, this is a guy that you and I kind of had circled at the beginning of free agency.
Yeah, he was in our breakdown, right? Yeah. When we did the players to watch, he was in that mix. He was in at least one of them. I know we did a couple of them. It's all starting to blend together at this point, right? But he was one of three that we identified. And so, he was on our short list for sure because of all the things that we just addressed. You know, he's one of the better pass blocking running backs in the league, and that's a major staple for Staley. And now, I know Swift kind of dropped a little bit, but at one point, Kerryon was number one. Swift was number five in pass blocking. I think when they finished the season, they were a little bit lower. But I believe of running backs who like were in like that saw like 25% of their snap of offensive snaps. I think he was like eight or something. Like he's up there. I mean, you're looking at three guys who all live near the top of that, and that's going to be pretty important, especially when you have a quarterback that needs pass protection in order to be successful.
Well, let's move on to the move that happened literally minutes after, as I think we had already crossed over midnight. The Lions agreed to a trade for defensive tackle Michael Brockers from the Rams. We learned today that the compensation that they had to pay was a 2023 seventh round pick, also known as nothing. Basically free. Obviously the cost here and the reason he became free is because it was a salary cap dump for the Rams. He was going to cost them over $9 million in cap space. I think the one drawback that people saw in this trade was that the Lions were then going to take on a pretty big cap hit, upwards of, I think, $8.5 million. But news dropped today from Dave Burkett that he is going to be getting a whole new deal, of which we don't have the details yet, but you have to imagine, given how tight the cap is this year, that it'll probably cut into that $8.5 million in 2021 and you know, be a little heavier down the line. So with all that in mind, I'm going to go right back to you, Ryan. Thoughts on the Michael Brockers trade?
Yeah, as if I wasn't impressed enough with as I'm scrolling through and seeing the Jamal Williams news, the Michael Brockers trade seems like a huge windfall for the Lions. For a line that has just absolutely been starved for healthy, productive bodies for so many years, it's nice that the Lions are getting somebody who's been pretty steady. You know, he's dealt with some injuries, but I think what the Lions are getting is a very stout run defender. Now, he provides some pass rush ability for sure, but one of the stats that I want to point to is from Pro Football Focus. In 2019, he posted the fifth highest run stop percentage among defensive interiors, and that was on minimum of 250 plays, and earned the seventh highest rush defense grade among defensive interior players. So, I mean, I talked about it a little bit on the last podcast we did, but I think that when it comes to this defensive line, I think it's really going to be about gap control, and it's going to be about making sure they stop the run. I think that's what the Saints do really well. I think that's what the Lions are going to aim to do. And you know, the Brockers trade, you know, hold this in comparison to a trade that obviously I shouldn't say like reeked of desperation, but like The Everson Griffin trade was a conditional six-round pick that could have turned into a fifth-round pick, depending on the conditions. You get Michael Brockers for a seventh-round pick. I think this is a home run, Eric.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is an easy no-brainer. You're trading away a few 2 years into the future seventh-rounder for a starter. You know, like, this is a weak defensive tackle free agency class. It's a weak defensive tackle draft class. And finding a guy in this draft class that's going to be able to come in and start and maybe and play better than Brockers has, I don't know if that player is available in this draft class. Now, you can argue maybe a couple of guys at the top, but you're going to spend a lot more and capital trying to get one of those guys as opposed to getting Brockers. Now, he is 30. He just turned 30. So that's a bit of a downfall. And that's one of the reasons, I guess, why he's a little bit cheaper. But defensive tackles, they typically have a little bit longer of a shelf life, you know. And so I don't think you're tied to much of his contract beyond this year, even in a restructure. Right now, he's set to make $8 million. And in 5 days, that the $6.5 million base is going to become fully guaranteed. So I don't know if that matters from a timing standpoint. If they can wait for that to become guaranteed and then renegotiate, I don't think it really matters from a Lions standpoint. But they're probably going to convert a lot of that down to get, like Jeremy said, to get a lower number, and they'll push some into the future. But the nice thing is that's really all of the guaranteed money that they're working with. They have the opportunity. They have a 2019 option right now that'll probably become a guaranteed year. He's only got a little bit of money guaranteed in that as long as he's on the roster. So again, it's not that big of a deal to bring him in, give him an extension, and lower the number down. Now, from an impact on the field, again, this is a massive trade. You're acquiring a guy who's going to start for you. Okay. And the way that I envision this defensive line lining up is I'm kind of projecting them to be similar to the Rams. And by acquiring him, it kind of reinforces that to me, that I think he's going to continue to play that kind of four eye technique, which is right on the inside shoulder of the offensive tackle. And then he'll have a nose tackle, and then there'll be another guy on the opposite side, which in with the Rams was Aaron Donald. I think with the Lions, that's going to be more like where Trey Flowers plays, kind of in that 3 to 5 area. You can also kick him out wider if you need to. They want to be flexible. Romeo Okwara talked about that today. They want to be flexible in how they approach things. So I do think you're going to see some 4-3 concepts. I think you're going to see some 3-3 concepts. So there's a lot of value to like in a guy like Brockers because he can do that. Now, when you go, I want to add one more PFF stat, because Ryan, you went to PFF. I found a good PFF stat too. He had 30 pressures last year. Okay. Danny Shelton, Nick Williams, Deshaun Hand combined 30 pressures last year. Okay. That's disappointing for last year, but also a step in the right direction for Brockers this year. Now, the last thing I just want to add is he's also a high character guy who's a leader. He's been a captain for the past 3 seasons. He's going to be familiar with understanding how the Rams front operates. So when they're in that concept, he's going to be able to lead that group. He's going to be able to point, train, and as a 9-year veteran, he has that experience, being that in a leadership role. So there's a lot to like in the locker room as well. So there's so much to like about bringing a guy like him in, because he's going to impact so many different areas of what the Lions want to do.
Yeah. And I was just going to touch on that last point too, on a defense that's really trying to establish a culture here. Bringing in a guy like Michael Brockers is a great guy. I mean, he could step in and literally be a captain right away of this defense and basically tell everyone what they have to do, whether it's John Pennicini, a second year guy, whether it's Deshaun Hand, I think a guy who could learn a lot from someone like him or anyone they end up drafting. Eric, you put an article today that actually, listed where you think a lot of these new guys are going to play, Julian Okwara included. And you look at the defensive front and it's just like, that's not horrible. I mean, you're relying on John Pennicini to start, which is not ideal. I mean, a second year sixth round pick, but everywhere else, like if they and you always have to play the if game a little bit and get a little lucky, if they stay healthy, Lions might have an okay defensive front. And I feel like we've said that probably for the past 3 or 4 years. But you know, with a new defensive coaching staff, I think there's at least a little bit of room for optimism there.
You know what I think is what's deceptive is there's depth. There's more depth than I think we thought, right? And it's not necessarily that this is like at a talent level as some of the defensive lines we've seen in the past, but a guy like Nick Williams can play more than one spot on this defensive line. Deshaun Hand absolutely can play more than one spot on this defensive line. And then you look behind him, Cornell, the rookie from last year, who we didn't get to see because he hurt his knee in the first game practice of training camp last year. He was a defensive end that pushed inside. So again, he has that familiarity where he can play anywhere from the 3 to the 5 comfortably. And then Kevin Strong, beyond him as well, is a natural 3 technique, played 3 technique every down in college. And then in Detroit, they asked him to do more 2-gapping, which was completely new to him. Right. And he saw some struggling, but they kept him because his first step is lethal. He has a terrific first step. And so they kept him around because of that. This penetrating system that we are anticipating is going to be more beneficial to Kevin Strong as well. So it's almost like, they talked about the fact that a lot of these guys were misplaced and didn't know how to fit into the defense last year. I think that when we heard that from Campbell, we thought, okay, these are like the secondary guys and the linebacker. I think it's a defensive line as well. There was a lot of guys that were playing in roles that weren't natural to them.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here. With the yin comes the yang, and there were some sad news that came out of Lions free agency. The Lions lost a few fan favorites, including, I would argue, one of the best players of the Detroit Lions for the past 6.5 years. So we're going to get into that when we come back on this Emergency Detroit Lions Pride of Detroit podcast. And we are back on the Pride of Detroit Emergency Podcast, day 3 of free agency, or day 1, depending on which one you count. The legal tampering period is over. We are officially into the new 2020 league year. We just talked about the additions of Jamal Williams and Michael Brockers. Now let's get to some of the players that we are saying bon voyage to, including Matt Prater, who right before we jumped on this call agreed to a 2-year deal, signed a 2-year deal. It is a done deal. We are now signing contracts. So he signed a 2-year deal with the Arizona Cardinals. Full contract details aren't out there yet, but a $7.5 million base is what we're hearing, which I believe is over the 2 years. So we're talking $3.5 million a year. Guys, I've had this discussion with both of you, and I think the conclusion we all came to was just like, yeah, it probably doesn't make a ton of sense to spend $3-5 million on a good kicker, considering where this franchise is at. But get it done anyways, because I don't want to worry about kickers. And the Lions didn't get it done. So, let's just go gut reactions here before we start talking about who's next. Ryan, are you bumming today?
I wouldn't say that I'm bumming. I'm kind of in awe of how the Arizona Cardinals are putting together an all 2010 team with J.J. Watt and A.J. Green and now Matt Prater. But like you said, Jeremy, we talked about on the last podcast, having the kicker situation nailed down and not having to worry about it. You know, Prater's struggles aside from last season, whether or not he can return to form, I guess we'll be seen in the desert this year. But I think for all the kickalicious that we had to go through as Lion fans, it was nice to have a guy like Matt Prater who was way more on than off. And, you know, you don't have to look far in the division to see where kicking goes just absolutely awry. You know, the Vikings have dealt with it. The Bears made Cairo Santos the highest paid kicker in the NFL. I mean, there's just absolute lunacy that happens out there. So it was nice to have somebody like Prater. And, you know, the point could be made that it was an expensive thing to do for a team that's in the middle of a rebuild and maybe kicking won't be so super important this year. But it's going to be important eventually. And kickers have, you know, Eric mentioned how defensive tackles have a shelf life. Kickers have a pretty long shelf life too. So it wasn't like you had to think so short-sighted with Matt Prater, but I'm not bumming. I'm just disappointed.
The most dad response I've ever heard from you.
Well, I'm bumming. Look, from Eddie Murray to Jason Hansen to the kicker that you couldn't remember, Nate Freeze, to Hansen. It's been a pretty established kicking room for the Lions for a long time. I mean, the Nate Freeze disaster was awful. And for those of you who remember it, you don't want to relive through that. So, I mean, we've been spoiled, right? We've been spoiled. We're still spoiled with Jack Fox, which is nice. But
spoiled with kicking and punting. The Detroit Lions franchise
and,
is awesome.
And long snapping. Let's not throw Don out of the discussion.
I don't know. I assumed it was going to be a re-sign, so much so that I really haven't looked beyond a couple of guys who had connections and forgot that we had a guy even on the roster.
Yeah. So. Well, yeah. And let's, I guess, talk about that because, yeah, I'm bumming with you guys. I think, I don't know. It was just nice to have something to not worry about when you're talking about the Detroit Lions. It was nice. Even if, you know, the reign of amazing potential Hall of Fame players was at specialists, like at least we had that. because it was the one thing we could lord over the Vikings and lord over the Bears. Now we don't really get that. So, the one guy that the Lions do have on the roster is a guy called Matthew Wright. And if you don't know anything about him, I don't blame you. He went undrafted in 2019 out of UCF. The Lions acquired him in the offseason, I believe. Is he a future deal guy? I think he is. Yeah. But he spent 2020 as a backup to the Steelers, actually got in a little bit of playing time there, went 4-for-4 on field goals. Congratulations, buddy. I guess he was also the all-time scorer at UCF. I can't say I know a ton about the guy. He had a 75% completion rate at UCF, which was actually the exact same accuracy level of Matt Prater last year during his down year. So not a ton to be excited about there, but I mean, a rebuilding year, the guy has a cap hit less than $1 million. I guess there's no problem in just trying him out for a year and see what happens. I mean, it worked at punter last year, so maybe the Lions find something at kicker this year.
Yeah, I think the thing that we have to remember is that special teams coordinator Dave Phipp has taken an unknown rookie and turned him into a superstar in the past. So you never know. It did happen at punter, so maybe we can see lightning strike twice in the Lions kicking room.
Ryan, you seen any sense of optimism for the kicker, or are we headed towards a nightmare scenario of potentially drafting a kicker?
Oh God.
Okay, that can't happen. But what I do want to say is I have no idea who Matthew Wright is. That's so
fine. I mean, yeah. We got to get Hamza on here to give us some kicking tips. I know he's mostly a punter, but
Hamza could be a cheap option for the Lions.
That's true.
Doesn't he only punt though? I thought Hamza was a punter.
Move Jack Fox over to place kicker. I don't know. Just get wild with it. It's the 2021 Detroit Lions. Let's get nuts.
So I did want to mention the rookie kicker that Phipp did turn into a brief superstar was Cody Parkey. And Cody Parkey kicked a very important field goal that helped them secure their Super Bowl. And he was a big deal for a couple of years, and then he kind of fell off the cliff. But he's a free agent this year, too. So it's possible, like, maybe they bring him in to compete with Wright and see, and hopefully maybe a third. But, yeah, it's not – it looks pretty uncomfortable right now.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to some of the other guys that will be playing elsewhere in 2021. Marvin Jones Jr. signs with the Jaguars to reunite with Jamal Agnew and Daryl Bevell. 2 years, $12.5 million on that deal, $9 million guaranteed. So probably going to stick around for both of those years and a good chunk of change for a 30-year-old receiver. And then Justin Coleman signs a one-year deal for $2.75 million with the Dolphins, a significant decrease in salary there. I think he was due to make upwards of $9 million for his base salary here before he was cut. I don't know if there's really much to say about either of those guys. I mean, I'm glad those guys caught on, but clearly the Lions weren't going to pay Marvin Jones that much. Justin Coleman, I mean,
I think that shows his value, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's a prove it year for him. Another prove it deal. And I think we're going to see a lot of those with some of these Lions players after what happened under Matt Patricia, where these guys came in with all these high accolades. Justin Coleman was the highest paid nickel corner when he came into Detroit and was looking like he was playing like it. And then 2 years go by and, you know, now he's making less than $3 million a year. So rough sledding for those guys. Any comments about those guys that you were, any like surprises about any of those deals? Or is that just like, you know, that's about what I was expecting for those guys?
With the Jamal Agnew deal, I was pretty surprised at the price tag. Sure. You know, 3 years up to $21 million for a guy who has really kind of maxed out as like a specialist up to this point in his NFL career. So that contract seems to suggest that they're expecting something more out of him, and maybe they will. But the more surprising move was Marvin Jones. I thought that he was destined to become a Los Angeles Ram. It seemed like it made so much sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, with their own cap situation and what they have going on over there, it just obviously didn't seem to work. And all of a sudden, Trevor Lawrence has like a bunch of weapons around him. Laviska Shenault, DJ Shark, Marvin Jones, James Robinson. There's an awful lot of talent that you're putting around a quarterback that's supposed to be ready on day one, right out of the package. So that's, I don't know. Look out, Jaguars. Catch the fever.
Duval.
I think the Agnew one is the one that surprised me the most as well, because what we heard behind the scenes here was that, or I think Burke had even said it on Twitter, that the Lions were looking at Agnew as a potential fifth-year option guy, where they offer him a similar contract that they offered Jalen Reeves-Maven. And so that Jalen Reeves-Maven contract, it totals just like $2.3 million, but it only costs like just over $1 million against the cap. And Agnew was eligible for that. And I think they offered him a similar deal. So they were looking at like a $2 million contract for Agnew. And then he gets one that averages, I mean, I don't even remember what his contract totaled out at, but it was like seven, right? Or something like that.
It looked like seven, but it was up to $21 million. I think it ended up being more around like five and a half, six a year.
Okay.
But still a lot.
Significant increase. Yeah.
Yeah. It still almost triples what the Lions were expecting of him. And I think when we look at like what Justin Coleman was valued at, and then what he got on the market, and then what the Lions valued Agnew at, and then what he got on the market, I think it shows that the Lions are trying to give players cheaper contracts, trying to get better value out of them, and they're not trying to overspend, which was a key criticism of Quinn with almost every one of, like, he would sign three free agents in the first 2 days, right? And those guys would always be overpaid, right? Vitae, James, like, it just keeps going. Coleman, right?
Yeah.
You could argue Flowers, even though I will argue with that with you. Yes, this is a different approach. Like, they're saying, this is what we think you're at. You're going to get triple that somewhere else? Well, all right, we'll send you a nice thank you on Twitter.
And to get a nice sixth round compensatory pick in the process, probably.
And maybe even for Matt Prater, too.
Yeah, I mean, certainly in line. If the initial numbers are accurate, the Lions should be in line, I should say, not necessarily get. Depends on what the Lions do over the next few days.
Yeah, and remember, there's only four max
that
they can get, right? So, but right now, they're losing more than they're adding. So, step in the right direction.
And one more guy that I want to talk about that the Lions are losing. They cut Danny Shelton in a move that saves $4 million. And it appears they're keeping Nick Williams, which I think is a reversal of what most people thought was going to happen. A lot of people thought they would cut Nick Williams as a guy who saves them a little bit more money. Definitely not as, you know, purely talented, I would say, as Danny Shelton. But Nick Williams tweets out, let's see how these kneecaps taste this year. So that certainly seems to indicate that he is in with Dan Campbell, must have had some sort of conversation with him or something that told him he was staying. I think we probably have to tie this back in with the Michael Brockers conversation, because I don't think the two are mutually exclusive here. I think if you cut Danny Shelton, you spend some of that $4 million on a guy like Michael Brockers. Am I right in assuming those transactions are related in some sort of way?
Yeah. Look, you cut Shelton, then Williams tweets that out. And then like 6 or 8 hours later, you've traded for Brockers. Like, these are all connected. Absolutely. Yeah. Right. Like, and I think with the nose tag, I think they need the free room up for Brockers, and they had to debate between which of the two they wanted. And they opted for Williams. Now, maybe it's because they don't value the nose as highly as they value like a guy who can play the three through the five. In the Rams scheme, they use the nose about 60% of the time, and they split that between two guys. One guy plays like 40%, one guy plays like 20%. So you need some guys that can rotate to stay fresh, but you don't. It's not as vital of a position. And a lot of times, a nose tackle will jet, and then you bring on an athlete off the ball, so that you can utilize. So from a schematic standpoint, again, from where Brad Holmes is coming from, a guy like Nick Williams could potentially play more than a guy like Danny Shelton. And so, you know, maybe it just came down to money. Maybe it came down to preference. It's hard to tell. But, yeah, I absolutely agree that all of these defensive tackle things all happened in succession because of, as part of a strategy.
All right, let's move on to the last news of the day that's relevant to the Lions, and that is of Mr. Kenny Golladay, who remains, as of Wednesday night, unsigned, but we finally heard at least a little movement here. It appears he's got a deal on the table from the Bengals. What's interesting about it is that it's a one-year prove-it deal, which is not obviously what he's seeking. The other news is that he is going to visit the New York Giants sometimes this week to see what's going on there, which is interesting because it's been a while since we've heard about free agency visits. It wasn't allowed last year, and now it is. And I think we've forgotten that that's part of the process sometimes. But I think one thing is clear here is that the market there is just not what Kenny Golladay wants it to be. And you look down the pike of other deals, literally as we're recording this, it looks like Curtis Samuel is getting 3 years, $34.5 million with the Washington football team. That $11 million rate, we've seen a couple other ones right in that rank from 11 to $13 million. We know Golladay wants $18-19 million. I think it's pretty clear at this point he's not going to get that. But are you guys surprised at all by just how bad this market is for Kenny Golladay?
I'm not shocked. I'm not shocked from the standpoint that there are much cheaper, younger, potentially better alternatives that are available in the draft. And it seems like it's a really deep draft class when it comes to wide receivers. And I'm not sure how it's going to, rank up and compare with the class from last season, because I think that might end up being like an all timer. But this one is certainly shaping up to be very good. The other thing that I found was really interesting from Malik Wright was that Golladay was the one who approached the Bengals about the 1 year offer. Ooh, because of the market.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the idea is that it's not the other way around with the Giants. They're offering multiple years, which is why it's a waiting game. Right. So when you have that, now it's really interesting for Kenny Golladay, because what we've been on the podcast talking about is this is a guy who's going to turn 28 this season. If he ends up signing a one-year deal with the Bengals, well, I mean, what if he gets hurt? Now all of a sudden he's 29 and he's trying to recoup that $18 to $19 million contract that he was, originally offered for the Lions. He might be really feeling he's obviously feeling the effects of it during this free agency period, but, hopefully things work out the best for him. It clearly seems like he's no longer in the cards for the Detroit Lions. That's for sure.
I agree with that. And I do think the injury history is part of the issue that's slowing things up. The Giants want to bring him in before they're willing to offer him a contract. And I think that's because if they're going to offer him a multi-year deal, they want to know what his injury history is, right?
Yeah.
They want to get a full checkup on him. So, even on a one-year deal is not going to appeal to the Lions, especially at the price tag that he's going to command. And yeah, maybe it's going to be less, but Yeah, it's a tough spot, and you know, he's a unique type of receiver, right? You have to have a big arm QB that can get him the ball and let him win. And if your quarterback can't get the ball to him, he's not as valuable to you. And so that's going to limit his opportunities. And I am surprised it's only two teams talking to him right now. Maybe there's more that we just, you know, haven't been leaked, but yeah, there was so much hype around him. To have this market be awfully quiet is a bit surprising.
I think that there was just like a lot of hype with all the potential free agent wide receivers, right? Like, and then all of a sudden Allen Robinson gets tagged, Chris Godwin gets tagged, and then everybody else is kind of looking around like, okay, well, I mean, there might still be a market for, you know, the Juju and Kenny Galladay, but it's interesting now with like guys like Curtis Samuel signing deals before guys like, you know, Kenny Galladay and Juju Smith that were perceived to be at the top of the market.
And it makes you wonder if those franchise guys, if those teams are regretting applying the franchise tags on those guys, because now you're paying. Again, this is another conversation where we're talking about overpaying and the Bears are involved in it.
And that's the wild thing, though. Like with all those guys getting franchised, you would have thought it may have driven up the price, because, I mean, Galladay appeared to be in a class on his own in this free agency class at wide receiver. And I mean, some of the, I don't know, the hindsight or the reimagining of who Kenny Galladay is shocking to me, because I mean, Ryan, we were talking about him being a top 10 receiver at the beginning of last year. And now I'm hearing people saying he's not even a true number one. He's a number two receiver. He should get paid like a number two receiver. This is why am I, where is this coming from? Like, have you missed out? Like, oh, he can't separate. Like, okay, everyone loves the next gen stat that he can't separate, but forget that everything else that he does that is game changing. I mean, go back to some of the games last year. I know he only played five of them, but he made huge impacts on at least three of them.
Two things. One, it's the Janet Jackson effect. What have you done for me lately? Yeah. Okay, so when it comes to Kenny Galladay, Lions fans, they're pretty far removed from that Jacksonville game, you know, where he's tweeting, you know, money bag emojis. Yeah. But the other thing that, and I make this cross sport analogy because it was, and I'm not suggesting that Kenny Galladay is in the same stratosphere as like LeBron James when it comes to their respective sports, but like everybody hammered on LeBron James for like, oh, he doesn't have a jump shot, he can only get to the basket. Okay, well, like being near the basket's one of the easiest ways to score, and it's relying on his athleticism to get it done. Yeah. Kenny Galladay wins at the point of attack, like going and getting the ball. He's really, really good at it. It's not a fluke. Like he's done it year and year and year. So like, the revisionist history that's happening with Kenny Galladay is bad, bad, bad.
Yeah, it's recency bias, right? It's like you said with Janet Jackson, it's what have you done? And he's getting the cold shoulder right now. And because of that, people are starting to assume that that cold shoulder equals he's not good. And I think that's just a false prophecy there. Mm-hmm.
By the way, the fact that we got Eric Schlitt to say Janet Jackson in his first podcast appearance, that, I mean, that is an all-time podcast. I can't imagine you've ever gone on a radio or your own podcast and said that. Just two words.
I don't talk much music at all. So, yeah.
All right. Now everybody's just hoping for a nipple slip, Eric.
Okay. All right. Now we're definitely going to close it out. Thank you for joining us for this emergency podcast. We'll be covering more free agency throughout the week. We'll be doing a locker room session, hopefully sometime this weekend. If you don't have the locker room app, go get it. If you have an iOS device, we'll be there chatting about all the latest news. Obviously, there's some stuff still coming down the pike. Literally, while we recorded this podcast, the Lions made it official in terms of the Michael Brockers trade. We're going to have the Matthew Stafford stuff be official on Friday. So stick with us for all of that. But for now, thank you for listening. It's Chaos. Be kind.